I raise a point of order that impeachment Article 2 does not allege conduct that rises to the level of a high crime or misdemeanor as required under Article 2, Section 4 of the United States Constitution and is therefore unconstitutional.
Congress has proven one thing over the years, the fact that it is a creeping theater of tyranny.
This institution is no longer the world's greatest deliberative body. It's kabuki theater. What was established today was a new precedent, something that had never taken place in this chamber in the history of our republic. What the Senate Democrats decided to do with a simple majority was to bulldoze 200 years of precedent that said something very simple, that this chamber would honor our constitutional obligation and conduct a trial.
Following the impeachment shutdown on the Senate floor, our hijacked Congress went into overdrive.
Some say, well, we have to deal with our border first. The Ukrainian-Russian border is our border.
$300 million for Ukraine border security and zero for an invaded United States border. While our national debt hits $35 trillion, billions upon billions of dollars the United States doesn't have was sent to be washed under the guise of foreign interest. Looting the treasury of a dying currency that may have lost its last chance to begin patching up the gaping holes of U.S. national security. Would the real Ukraine please stand up so Americans can see what they're paying for?
There's just no question about that. I mean, you have fierce fighting in a number of locations around the country. You mentioned Chernobyl. Russian forces quickly overtaking that area. We understand they are still in control. The other thing that went down today that was of huge importance was...
Despite the rockets, Ukraine's nightlife is rocking. The bars and clubs are full. The place is jumping, music pumping, drinks flow freely, and they dance like there's no tomorrow. And it's not just here. Fun fact, there are now more bars and restaurants in the capital than before the start of the invasion.
And I have something that you're really going to like.
Yeah.
This is the official tally of the vote.
Yes, I see.
For the supplemental aid.
Yes.
And look at that vote. 73%.
Yeah. Thank you so much. 73%.
That's a good vote.
Good, good, very good.
These names that voted no are all that remain of those that recognize the limitations of our constitutional republic.
A bipartisan majority has been working for months to get this aid across the finish line, and after so long, we finally are at the threshold. Any further delays will waste time we do not have, that our allies do not have. That's exactly what this motion is. We need to get this bill passed ASAP.
Mr. President, we just heard the astounding claim that it would be, quote, a waste of time to allow individual senators to come here and do what they were elected to do, which is to offer improvements to pending legislation. We're not a rubber stamp for the House. We're not a rubber stamp for either party's leadership in either chamber. We're United States senators, and we should be able to vote as such. If you support a fair and open amendment process, if you want to improve the bill, you should support my motion to table. This will not create the post-apocalyptic hellscape that those in leadership would have us believe will ensue. There will not be dogs and cats living together in the streets, nothing out of the book of Revelations. We will just find ourselves in a position of being able to do our job.
The House amendment to the Senate amendment to H.R. 815 is agreed to.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'm making sure the shipments start right away. In the next few hours, literally the few hours, we're going to begin sending in equipment to Ukraine for air defense munitions, for artillery, for rocket systems, and armored vehicles. You know, this package is literally an investment, not only in Ukraine's security, but in Europe's security.
America, we must build a device to hold these scumbags accountable. If Congress wants to game the system, then the American people will use that game against them. There are millions of us. Ask yourself, how easy would it be to unleash lawfare on the sitting ducks in the country club in Washington, D.C. every time they vote on legislation that corrodes our founding principles and endangers our...
Stuff together. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We have a lot to cover today. We're taking your calls throughout the show as well. But we got a lot to talk about. It's a big day yesterday evening. A lot of stuff popped off. We're going to get into all of it, including the massive protests at UT and Columbia and all over the place. I have so many videos of this taking place across the country. We'll get to as many of those as possible. We also have Ukraine war news, the TikTok ban to talk about, and it's a big day for Donald Trump's legal existence. So let's not waste any time. Get right into it. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 25th of April. Situation is unraveling. Pro-Palestinian protests erupt across America's woke colleges. Colleges and universities across the country are struggling this week to keep pro-Palestinian protesters off school grounds. Students and or perhaps a mix of professional protesters funded by radical leftist groups and dirty Gulf money are storming campuses and setting up encampments. This is likely a coordinated effort nationwide, as other pro-Palestinian demonstrators have been busy shutting down critical infrastructure across the country, such as airport terminals, bridges, and other choke points that could disrupt the economy. And again, we'll get into this and its various manifestations from Columbia to USC to UT and everywhere in between. Massive protests taking place just in time for the second edition of the Summer of Love in 2020. It's George Floyd 2.0, only this time the thing they're protesting is real. So that's interesting. Also, ironically, the thing they're protesting is real. The protests are, in fact, peaceful this time. And instead of the police kneeling before the protesters, they are brutally arresting them. So a few differences, but all in all, gearing up for another summer of mayhem and chaos and protests and crackdowns and all of it leading to the destruction of the rights of the American people. We'll get into it. Meanwhile, Ukraine to step up long-range strikes on Russia. Oh, good. Oh, wonderful. Ukraine will step up its long-range strikes inside Russia, the chief of Britain's defense staff has predicted. Admiral Tony Radakin also suggested that incoming Western aid will help Kiev gain the upper hand despite the difficult situation. But of course it won't, it's not going to, and the long-range attacks into Russia will only serve to exacerbate the problem and likely lead to, you know, greater conflict outside of Ukraine, which is, I guess, what we're paying for. I guess that's what we wanted when we sent them tens of billions of dollars. But you saw the report from John Bowne in the First Five about Ukraine. Other, you know, experts in the field saying Ukraine has about 6 months to go. So we're paying about $10 billion a month to have Ukraine hobble towards its inevitable failure. Meanwhile, Trump faces critical legal day and hush money trial and before the Supreme Court. For most people, sitting in court at their own criminal trial represented a defining moment in their life. But Donald Trump's return to his hush money trial Thursday does not even represent the most critical courtroom drama of his day. The ex-president's attention is certain to stray from what he has repeatedly complained is a freezing court in New York to the neoclassical splendor of the U.S. Supreme Court. Justices will be hearing oral arguments in this sweeping immunity case that could have profound implications for his legal fate and poses never-before-resolved questions about the power of the presidency. This is at least partly the Supreme Court case we've been talking about for the last week or so. But yeah, he simultaneously is in court listening to some dude named Pecker talk about his sex life, while simultaneously the Supreme Court is in their robes deciding whether or not a law about destroying evidence in a financial criminal trial could be applied to grandmothers wandering through the Capitol on January 6th. So everything is just as stupid as it was yesterday. Meanwhile, U.S. TikTokers slam Biden's ban or sell law as propaganda, claimed to bring back Trump. On April 24th, President Joe Biden put an end to the year-long debate about a TikTok ban in the U.S. by signing a ban or sell bill. However, this decision did not come as a surprise to TikTok creators in the country who'd been anticipating such a move. Many creators have spoken out against the law, calling it the height of hypocrisy and propaganda, while few supported the move. So as David Sacks on Twitter said, that's one down, three to go, right? They've gotten TikTok, next they'll go after X, and then Rumble after that, because they've opened the door to full-fledged censorship and total control of any social media platform that is not controlled by, well, Jewish interests, to be honest with you. It's about the Jews. It's about the fact that TikTok has a lot of anti-Israel sentiment on it, and that's why it's being destroyed. It has nothing to do with the trans kids that are being influenced. It has nothing to do with the anti-American or communistic activity that's happening on TikTok. That will continue unabated, but the anti-Israel content will come to a screeching halt, and that's what this is all about. That's how they were able to get it through in a bipartisan manner with such incredible and unprecedented rapidity. It's because apparently our government is incredibly powerful, can do pretty much anything, but will never lift a finger if it's not in direct support of Jewish interest or Israeli interest. It is really becoming obvious at this point, and we'll talk about that more at the end of this Daily Dispatch. Biden signs foreign aid bill providing crucial military assistance to Ukraine. President Biden on Wednesday signed into law a package providing crucial military assistance to Ukraine, capping months of negotiation and debate. Yes, folks, for months, the politicians have been hard at work in Washington, D.C., fretting over how to spend your money on war. It's finally the conclusion has arrived. The inevitable outcome of they're going to take a lot of it and send it to Ukraine for no discernible reason. Finally, these you know, nail-biting negotiations have concluded, and they have, in fact, decided to spend tens of billions of your taxpayer dollars on war that can't be won against an enemy that we have nothing against, and for a purpose that has not in the slightest been elucidated by the people that are doing this to us. It really is infuriating to hear this stuff talked about, like, after months of negotiation, these guys at a table like, I want to spend $70 billion. No, I want to spend $60 billion. It's just, and it's not even their money. It's they've been negotiating about how to rob you and send your money to kill people. That's it. That's the purpose of our government at this point. It's protect, you know, the feelings of Jews and fund wars with your money. That is the purpose and existence of our entire federal government at this point. And I'm not kidding. And I'm pissed off about this, because let's just can we do a little compare and contrast for the moment, since we're talking about, you know, this whole thing being get some paper here, being compared to the 2020 riots. We'll use a Sharpie so we can all make sure to see. Let's just do a little compare and contrast for the George Floyd Summer of Love 2020 and the Palestinian protest on college campuses. Okay? So we got BLM and Palestine, right? All right, back then, where did it start? On college campuses, mostly. College campuses. Same with Palestine, right? That's the same. That's pretty similar. Okay, BLM, hugely violent, burning massive amounts of the city, just entire city blocks, just people getting bashed continuously, murders taking place, people trying to defend their property being slashed and shot, and just absolutely brutal. The Palestinian protest, so far, actually peaceful. Let's be honest. It's been peaceful. It's kids with tents and signs gathering outside of their colleges. Nothing's been burned. Nothing's been destroyed. Okay. BLM, the issue they were facing, issue non-existent, did not exist, was a complete fabrication. Existent? Didn't actually exist. The racism of police, the attacks on innocent black people for no reason, a racist system. It literally doesn't exist. Literally does not exist. You'd ask the protesters what they were protesting for. They'd say the police are killing black people. You'd say how many? They'd say 10,000 a year, when the answer was actually closer to about 12. And of those 12, about 10 of them were perfectly justified. And it was black guys who were unarmed, yes, but also like trying to run police over in a car. So non-existent. The thing that Black Lives Matter was protesting did not exist. So let's just be clear about that. And yet they were burning cities down over it. Palestine issue, as far as I'm concerned, literal genocide. something that's been happening for 6 months in full view of everybody as the videos get posted every single day. An absolutely horrific, hellish landscape of death and destruction with the wails of orphaned children piercing your ears nightly for 6 months. So again, BLM, their issue was literally non-existent. Palestine, the issue could literally be classed as genocide. All right. So again, we're just comparing and contrasting these few things. What else? What is the goal here? The goal for Black Lives Matter, what did they want? They wanted to defund the police. Absolutely retarded, hugely, damaging to everybody involved. They also just wanted to discriminate against white people. Discriminate white, right? That was one of the big outcomes, right? Is they demanded that more black people be put in positions of power. And so, of course, they were. And so despite the fact that America is at this point 60%+ white, since the Black Lives Matter riots, something like 99% of the executive jobs have gone to non-white people. So that was one of the goals of Black Lives Matter, and they achieved it. The goals in Palestine would be defund Israel. Which, again, why are we paying for and giving cover for a foreign nation's aggressive land grab war of aggression, like their open invasion and colonization of their subject state? Completely insane. Now, the real difference comes when you compare these two things, these two columns, with the reaction. Black Lives Matter, kneeling, passing laws, going on TV and crying about it, just anti-white hatred. Palestine, the Palestinian protest, police, just aggressive shutdown. So what I'm trying to illustrate here is that it's not just a difference of response. The response is the big difference, right? And we'll go over some of the reactions of people in power. People like Greg Abbott, governor of Texas, who literally said that you will be arrested for anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism, I remind you, is a thought. Anti-Semitism is an idea that they're arresting you for now. Okay, so it's not just that the reaction is different. It's that the reaction is different and also different in an inverted way to the seriousness of what these protests represent. It was the violent one who were protesting the non-existent issue, right? That was coordinating with the mainstream media. That was funded by billionaires paying for, bail funds and that sort of thing. The one that was openly and explicitly racist, anti-white. That's the one that got allowed to run rampant for months on end. That's the one that had politicians kneeling and doing the bidding of the protesters and passing the laws that they demanded in rapid succession. The Black Lives Matter riot, the one protesting the non-existent issue that was violently burning down buildings, attacking white people, attacking everybody, costing America billions of dollars and exacerbating racial strife on, again, a non-existent issue. That's the one that gets allowed to run out of control, run rampant, gets the full-fledged support of not just Democrats, but Republicans as well. And we'll show you a clip from Mike Johnson. We'll show you a couple clips from Mike Johnson showing his response to these two protest movements breaking out. But it was the violent nonsense one that was allowed to go. It's the peaceful one actually protesting a real world crime against humanity, that's the one that gets brutally shut down by the stormtroopers. I mean, this is beyond infuriating. This isn't just, oh, well, they did something and got away with it, and the other people did the same thing and got away with it. No, no, the side that was the violent psychopaths with the policies that would fully destroy America, they're the ones that get kneeled to and, oh, well, it's free speech, and that's our sacred right as a nation, is our free speech. Meanwhile, they're just some black guy bashing an old lady in the head with a 2x4, and they're like, free speech. Rights are the language of the unheard. I guess this is just the beauty of American liberty. And then it's just like, some liberal freshman sitting with a headscarf on the lawn outside of a campus, and they're just like, send in the stormtroopers, arrest them all, destroy them. Because actual physical and political destruction of our nation comes not just second, but like way down the list of priorities when compared to hurting Jewish people's feelings. That's the message I'm getting from this. What I'm getting from this is, if you oppose the geopolitical maneuvers of the Jewish state, then you are to be shut down with the brutality, all the brutality that the federal or state government can wield. If you are a, you know, communist color revolutionist organizing to riot and destroy entire city blocks, well, then you are a brave American hero, and free speech is the ultimate, you know, it's the paramount concern of the people in charge. So this type of, I mean, beyond hypocrisy, whatever you want to call this, is so intolerable to me. It's hard to explain. Like, we pretty much literally live in a Jewish theocracy at this point. I know I've sort of made that joke before. But if you really look at the laws being passed, and you look at the way that, I mean, there's no law against protest. I mean, these are protests. These are peaceful protests. If they weren't, I wouldn't call them that, because I don't call peaceful protests peaceful if they're not peaceful. It doesn't even matter if I was for or against what they're doing here. I'm not for a lot of protests, but I'm still for the protests. You see what I'm saying? I'm not for the, you know, like a Patriot Front. I'm not into Patriot Front. I'm not on their side. I don't really believe in what they believe in. But they have a right to protest without being assaulted and arrested. Okay? The Palestinian protesters have a right to protest whether or not you like what they're protesting for. And the fact that they're using anti-Semitism to destroy our free speech in this country is ridiculously obvious. Ridiculously obvious. And at this moment, they are passing anti-Semitism hate speech laws in the federal government that will see a new office inside the White House be formed explicitly to protect Jews from criticism. And then there will be apparatchiks in every branch of the federal government to make sure that that particular branch is doing everything it can to destroy the ability of the American people to speak out against this particular religious or ethnic group. In the states, Georgia, Texas, Florida, definitely, there's South Dakota, at least six states at this point are passing anti-Semitism speech laws, hate speech laws, not hate crime laws, which are already ridiculous because a crime is a crime. And I remind you, if these protesters were attacking people, that's already a crime. You don't need an extra hate speech thought crime on top of that. But at the national level, they're implementing this anti-Semitism Inquisition, right? The SA, but for Jews this time. Then at the state level, you have anti-Semitism laws being passed. And then at the international level, you have proposals being put forth now to create an entirely new office inside the UN that will have the power to prosecute anti-Semitism like it's a war crime or it's genocide or it's some other violation of just like basic humanity, like a crime against humanity is how they're treating it. I want to remind you, the thing we're talking about, anti-Semitism, is an idea. It's a thought. It's a series of words. It doesn't hurt anybody. It cannot be defined as anything other than words or thought or ideas. And so at the international, the national, and even the local level, they are putting in place a legal structure to literally make it illegal and punishable by extreme measures to criticize Jewish people, their actions, their, like, if they commit crimes, the nation of Israel. I mean, they're implementing a global Jewish inquisition as we speak. We're literally being entered into a global Jewish theocracy, which I guess goes hand in hand with the, you know, red heifer sacrifice. Like, this is the ultimate goal of the globalists. If you marry Zionism, which is, you know, nationalism, but times a thousand for Israel, with communism, which is dissolving the borders and structures of every other nation state, combine these two things, you get globalism. And that's what's being set up right now, is there will be a one world government with a one world religion that will be administrated out of Israel, which will have a national sovereignty that will not just be inviolable in terms of the landmass of Israel, but will also extend to Jews everywhere else who will be considered citizens of Israel and therefore untouchable and therefore criticizable. And it doesn't matter if what they're doing is based on Judaism. It doesn't matter. Nothing. None of that matters. Look at the definition of anti-Semitism. It says things like, Jewish actions, whether real or imagined, actual crimes that Jewish people commit. If you talk about it, that will be considered anti-Semitic. So they're building a one world religion that will be headquartered in Israel, administrated out of Jerusalem, in which Jews will be an untouchable, uncriticizable, feudal class of overlords, and everybody else will be subject to it. And it will be enforced at the national level, the international level, and the local level. Do you understand how they're doing this? And so if you're playing along with this, if you're thinking, yeah, stupid pro-Hamas protesters, that's what you get for, protesting a foreign state on American soil. Are you an idiot? Are you stupid? Do you not realize what they're doing here? Do you not realize what's going on? Problem, reaction, solution. Start the war. Allow the attack on October 7th to take place. Use it as an excuse to start a brutal and horrific war in the full view of everybody. Inspire the outrage of decent, normal people, including kids in college in America. Get them to protest. Brutally shut it down. That's only going to inspire more protest. That's only going to cause the whole thing to get more chaotic and more violent and more out of control. And at the end of it, it's your free speech that gets destroyed. It's your ability to speak out about anything ever that's on the chopping block right now. As if we'll even have the platforms to stop it, because obviously TikTok just got destroyed because they dared to allow people to have free speech, and some of that speech ended up being anti-Semitic. And that's not even getting into the corporate world or the academic world where, you have professors just being like, actually, I think it's good that kids are getting involved in geopolitics, and they get fired for their anti-Semitic comments, or the president of Harvard gets ousted because all the billionaire Jews force her out of office. Then they blame it on DEI and replace her with somebody who loves DEI just as much, but happens to be an Israeli Jew. I mean, and they're doing it with Columbia now. There's a headline, Jewish billionaires say they're going to withdraw their funding from Columbia if something isn't done right now. So academia and the corporate world, right? Google just fired 50 more of its employees for not wanting to participate in the active genocide by building the AI that Israel uses to target and destroy Gazans, and they get fired. So you can't have a job. You can't go to college. You can't have free speech if you aren't fully submissive to whatever the hell any Jewish person anywhere wants to do. That's the world they're creating. And if you're celebrating them shutting down these Hamas protests, you are a You're a stupid goy. you're a stupid, useful idiot for these people. Where we will defend the rights that Americans and our forefathers fought and died for, regardless of who they offend. And let me be clear. Everybody should be against what's happening right now. Absolutely everybody should recognize the obvious danger of allowing the government to restrict any speech whatsoever. It doesn't matter how they categorize it. So if you're a Jewish person that thinks that this is good, you're digging your own grave. You're digging your own grave because this is not going to go away. This is America. You are not going to be able to forcibly shut down these protests. They're only going to get bigger the more you try to squeeze them. So what are you doing? What are you doing? Nobody should be in favor of this. Absolutely no one. This has nothing to do with whether you're Jewish or not. It has to do with whether you believe in free speech or not, whether you're an American or not, or whether, the rights of Americans, the American people are valued more to you than a foreign nation state. And in terms of like politicians, I mean, whether you as the governor of Texas care about the people of Texas or about the check you get from Israel or whatever else they have on you. God only knows what they have on Greg Abbott. It must be something big. But let's go to some of these politicians and do another little compare and contrast, which is, again, the actual infuriating part. Just thinking back to 2020. We're begging Trump, please unleash the National Guard, because this is not a protest. This is a violent insurrection. Because at that point, they were burning buildings. They were gathering every night, and they were doing so in cooperation with the leaders of cities and media outlets, right? Hot mic moments where the organizer of a Black Lives Matter rally in like Pennsylvania is like, oh yeah, I was flown here from Chicago, and we're organizing this whole thing, and I'm in touch with your producer, talking to an NBC camera guy. So just highly coordinated, hugely orchestrated, extremely well-funded insurrection, tearing down statues, burning buildings, looting museums, killing people. Please, for the love of God, can we unleash the National Guard just to bring back some semblance of peace and stop these ravenous roving mobs of psychopaths? So we had to send out, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse. He did a good enough job as any one man can do, but we're begging for the police to actually do something against the actual violence being committed. Never happened. Got nothing but politicians kneeling for the violent rioters running around beating people up. And it's that discrepancy. It's between, wow, these people are actually causing a violent insurrection, and they're, by the way, passing laws to defund the police, which was obviously a terrible idea and has only resulted in tens of thousands of more deaths. So we were desperate for something to protect the American people from these communist agitators running roughshod over law and order. Got absolutely nothing. Got less than nothing. Got Kamala Harris telling people to donate to the bail fund so these violent criminal morons could be released from prison without suffering any punishment. Now we've written them $10,000 checks. Compare that to, well, people are what, making people uncomfortable? Oh, they're saying things that make you kind of scared, even though no violence has actually happened? Well, send in the stormtroopers. It's not even about the protest. We don't even have to compare it to the protest. We can compare it to the way that Texas has been completely, has had absolutely no action against the border, right? It turns out that if the government wants, it can just send troops to shut down anything. So just understand, everything that we're going through now is a choice. The invasion is a choice. The participation in this massacre across the world whose reverberations are robbing us of our free speech is a choice that we're making. Now, it's infuriating because there's other more important things that I wish the American people would actually get involved with. You know, our country is also being destroyed, you know. We could protest that if you felt like it, but they're in favor of that. Like, I don't even like these people. I don't even like the people protesting, but they have a right to protest. And what they're protesting is real. And they're not being violent. So why are you sending stormtroopers? Why are you sending stormtroopers in? And why are you treating it in such a different way as you did George Floyd? Let's go to Mike Johnson here. First, let's go to clip 20. Speaker Mike Johnson just repeats one of the most blatant and immediately contradicted and disproven pieces of atrocity propaganda out of the Israel war against Gaza. Let's go to clip 20.
Denied the horrific facts of September 11, 2001, the attacks on the United States that happened right here in New York City, and they've attempted to excuse or to ignore the barbaric attack of Hamas in Israel on October 7, 2023, where Israeli women and children were savagely raped and murdered, and infants were cooked in ovens.
Literally nobody believes that.
Crowds of radical left activists have chanted death to America and on our own streets in this country.
Oh, dear.
And some public officials have refused to condemn them. Others.
Never happened. That never, there, no babies were ever cooked by, I mean, that is just a straight up lie. It is straight up atrocity propaganda. There were no roving rape. There's not a mass rape gang. I mean, New York Times reported that and has had to very shamefacedly walk back all of their reporting about that. That never happened. So Mike Johnson was just blatantly lying to everybody right there. But let's see what else he says. Clip number 26. Clip number 26.
If we don't bring order to this chaos, it could escalate. I mean, clearly, by some estimates, there was a Fox News report a couple of days ago, maybe 200 campuses have some form of this. Columbia stands out because it's one of the great institutions. It has a revered history there, and they're trampling all over it. This is not the expression of free speech. It's not the free exchange of ideas in the public square. This is threatening and intimidating Jewish students because of who they are, because of what they believe. We met with a big group of Jewish students before we went to the campus, and they're hiding in fear. They don't go to class. They're afraid they're going to be assaulted. It's not fair to them. Some of them had to bring federal lawsuits, civil rights violations that are being committed there. And taxpayer dollars should not be going to institutions that are engaging in this kind of nonsense. If you're an administrator on a university campus, your number one job, the first and most obvious, is the safety and security of your students. If you can't guarantee that, we need to find somebody who can.
Mm. Wow. This is the thing. Wouldn't it be great? I mean, can you imagine having a government that stood up for you? It must be nice, honestly, to the Jews out there. Congratulations, you guys. I mean, it must feel really nice. Really. Years and years and years of anti-white activity, violent attacks against conservative speakers, the heckler's veto, shutting down people who were invited to colleges. For years, this has gone on. Not a peep out of anybody in the American government. Oh, but if you make some Jewish students feel uncomfortable, if they say they think they might get, assaulted, well, roll out the National Guard then. Let's quickly go to clip number 29 here. This is 2020, Mike Johnson talking about George Floyd.
What did you feel when you watched the video of George Floyd being killed?
I was outraged. I don't think anyone can view the video and objectively come to any other conclusion but that it was an act of murder. And I felt that initially, as everyone did. It's so disturbing. And, the underlying issues beneath that are something that the country is now struggling with. And I think it's something we have to look at very soberly and with a lot of empathy. And I'm glad to see that's happening around the country. You know, what it's taught me is we now have four other children of our own. And my oldest son, Jack, ironically, this year is 14. And I've thought often through all these ordeals over the last couple of weeks about the difference in the experiences between my two 14-year-old sons, Michael being a Black American and Jack being white.
Yeah, there
Caucasian.
You go. Yeah, crying about white supremacy and oh my God, it's
Jack
so sad. Oh yeah, what about all the videos
does.
Of the dead Gazan children? That doesn't make you sad too, Mike
Michael
Johnson? That's a little
both.
Bit hypocritical, isn't it? The criminal overdosing on fentanyl, that's what makes you sad? We'll close out this hour talking about the protests and showing you some video of what actually the crackdown has looked like. We'll also move into the TikTok ban, since these things are closely related. Since free speech has a limit in America, that limit is Israel. You can have all the free speech you want until you start talking about them. Until you start talking about Israel, suddenly it's good books are banned. It's good to ban social media companies. It's good to send the National Guard in to arrest college students for sitting on the ground. Everything gets inverted all of a sudden. And the conservatives, for some godforsaken reason, defend this crap. Actually, let's go to clip 10 here, because Matt Baker expressed this in a way that only Matt Baker can. And then he put a little funny clip at the end, by the way. Don't let it surprise you. He put a clip of Nancy Pelosi at the end, just in case you're confused at what you're seeing. Here's Matt Baker, clip 10.
Okay, guys, you want to know what's going to happen with these protests here in America? I mean, I haven't heard a single person point it out. But if you haven't noticed, both sides of our government are paid off by Israel. Now, Joe Biden, he can't come out against Israel strong. He can't do it. So they get someone like Greg Abbott. There's someone, a right-winger, that they can crack down. They want this to be isolated to an individual human being atrocity. They're going to turn the entire argument into so-and-so, so-and-so, George Floyd, fill in the blank, got murdered by cops because a right-winger said so. And all the people on the right wing are going to go, yeah, those guys deserve to get their heads cracked. Screw those leftists. And then all the people on the left will say, oh, we're going to march in the streets. I mean, doesn't this all seem a little familiar to you? BLM? Anybody? The left needs this. The left is floundering completely. They can't come out against Israel. They can't say, oh, we're for the Palestinians in full, and that's the right-wingers who want to do that. They can't do it. But what they can do is say, we're with the protesters, and we're with so-and-so, so-and-so, Habedin Humanubu, who ended up getting killed during the protest, and now all these protesters and Joe Biden can come out, we gotta have these protesters, we gotta have a riot, we live in America, we need free speech, we gotta have America. And then they're gonna get all their little college teams together, they're gonna get the band back together, and we're gonna be back in 2016 all over again. Okay?
Anyway, so it had nothing to do with him. But I think what really got to him was these court cases and the fact that the House Democratic Caucus is not on a path to impeachment. And that's where he wants us to be.
Leave it to Matt Baker, slave to liberty, to leave you with a smile. I think he's exactly right. I think that's the obvious play here. And again, I want to emphasize the point I'm making here is that this is not a response to violence. They don't respond to violence. When Black Lives Matter is violent, they kneel. They surrender. They in fact, approach the protesters and say, whoa, 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 whoa. It's dangerous for you to be doing this. We should do it. Let us do it. That literally happened in multiple cities throughout the South where there's one in Alabama where protesters are trying to tear down a statue. The mayor showed up with his security detail and said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Everybody go home. We'll bring a crane tomorrow. We'll take this thing down safely. So that's the reaction when there's actual violence and destruction going on. It's hold on. Let the state contribute. In that case, the police came storming in to tear the statue down and help the protesters. And then they paid them tens of millions of dollars in cities like New York and Philadelphia. So that's what happens if you're actually violent, actually protesting something that doesn't exist, like the racist murder of 10,000 black police a year. Doesn't exist, never happened, but they're protesting over it. Meanwhile, as far as I can tell, I mean, except for one or two scuffles that broke out here, there, across the country, I mean, just literally nothing compared to what happened with Black Lives Matter. Just something you kind of expected every big protest, some counter protester showing up and getting shoved or getting hit with a flag or something like, eh. These aren't roving gangs of looters, you know, beating the crap out of anybody they find like happened in 2020. So what they're saying in no uncertain terms is you will be arrested if you have the wrong mindset. You will be arrested if you think the wrong thoughts. You will be arrested if you are not fully in favor of whatever Israel does whenever it does it. And Greg Abbott, again, I don't have to, you know, try to translate for you what he's saying. He is saying it in plain English. Arrests being made right now and will continue until the crowd disperse. I mean, the best case scenario would be Greg Abbott is making this so egregious, such a blatant violation of so many American rights that he's like actually on the side of the protesters because he wants to get them millions of dollars because they're going to sue and they're going to win. Because when you send out police to arrest people and you say this will continue until the crowd of peaceful protests disperse, there's no uncertainty about whether or not you're using the force of the state to shut down a peaceful assembly. One of the five rights explicitly delineated in the First Amendment. So, you know, either he's an idiot that is just absolutely controlled by Israel, or he is like working, pretending to do that, but actually setting up the Palestinian protesters to get big old cash payouts a couple years from now when this thing makes its way through the courts, because this is clearly a violation of the First Amendment. And him saying this removes any ambiguity about that. Without him saying this, you could make the argument, well, the police were there just to ensure peace and things got a little bit out of hand, but it was never an attack on free speech. Greg Abbott is precluding that argument. He is making it obvious what the point of this is. It's to shut down free speech. It's to shut down peaceful protests. So this is going to end up rewarding the people that he thinks he's shutting down. That's why all of this is so stupid. Arrests being made right now and will continue until the crowd disperses. These protesters belong in jail. He calls them protesters and then say they belong in jail because why? Quote, anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas, period. Anti-Semitism is an idea. Anti-Semitism is words. It's thoughts. It's speech. So remove anti-Semitism and just replace it with any other descriptor. And it's obvious what's happening here. If this was people protesting the Catholic Church's abuse scandal, and you sent in police and said the police will arrest everybody until the crowd disperses and anti-Catholicism will not be tolerated, it'd be kind of obvious what was happening, right? If this was black people protesting for, you know, against discrimination, and you had the governor of the state sending in police and saying anti-whiteism will not be tolerated, we're going to arrest everybody who gathers in opposition to us whites. Be kind of obvious, wouldn't it? So I don't get how they get the right wing to go along with this. I don't get how they get, I mean, I guess it has to do with 10 years of programming to think that, you know, Muslims are the most evil people in the world. And therefore, if you, you know, protest the indiscriminate slaughter of Muslim and Christian civilians, you are therefore a terrorist, and we don't negotiate with terrorists. I mean, maybe this is just the programming from 2001, you know, reaching its ultimate conclusion. But it's time to wake up. It's time to realize how easy it is for them to destroy our rights, to eliminate our free speech. I mean, what do you think is going to happen? You think they're going to pass a law that bans this protest in particular, or are they going to pass a law that restricts the First Amendment wholesale across the board, like what they're doing with TikTok? We'll get to TikTok in a second. He says students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests in any public college or university should be expelled. And maybe they probably will be. I mean, hell, what? You're supposed to be able to work in a university in America without pledging loyalty to a foreign nation and subservience to an ethnic religious group? Not in our, not in Mike Johnson's America. Not in Greg Abbott's Texas. Johnson demands Biden send in National Guard during raucous Columbia visit, as he has demanded that the president of the University of Columbia step down. And of course they will, because the Jewish billionaires that fund the universities are saying that if you don't fire this president and put in somebody who will restrict the free speech of their students, we won't fund you anymore. And so they're gonna do it. I imagine the Columbia University president will be fired soon, and she'll be replaced by a Zionist who will shut down these protests through by any means necessary, you know, through whatever means are necessary. Again, I just imagine if we had a government that cared about us like our government cares about Israel. All right, welcome back, folks. Free speech is under attack across the board. Almost, you know, it's across the board for a couple ways. Obviously, there's the soft censorship of social media. They'll use any excuse to, you know, silence people who are dissident or, you know, support freedom or liberty in any form. That's obvious. But the most effective censorship is coming exclusively from Israel. And it really is astonishing to see the rapidity and ferocity of the American government when it's something they care about. When it's the border, it's all, we just were trying here, but it's so hard. And they're just like handing out gift cards to migrants as they wander through the open hole in the fence, put them on a bus, and they're just sitting there building a colony for migrants. Gee, I wish we could stop this, but the Republicans refused to pass the bill, and they just can't, we can't do anything. When Donald Trump brought up the TikTok ban because China is using it to poison the minds of children, zero support. It went absolutely nowhere. And all of a sudden, a year later, It flip-flops, and suddenly the TikTok ban has bipartisan support. It's brought up 1 week, and the next week the bill is passed, and now it's been signed. Amazing, the rapidity with which the American government can act if it so chooses. Why is it acting? Well, let's go to TikTok to find out. This TikTok both explains why they're banning TikTok, and it's the type of TikTok that they're trying to ban. It's a nice little meta commentary for you here. Let's go to this kid with 3.2 million followers on TikTok.
I'm going to show you three clips and prove to you that they're trying to ban TikTok because this app is pro-Palestinian. Our first clip comes from the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, a Zionist by the name of Jonathan Greenblatt. Let's see what he has to say. This Zionist is saying that Israel has a TikTok problem because TikTok is the place where people are being educated and turning pro-Palestinian. And that's true. The world has gotten to see the horrors that are happening in Gaza because of TikTok. But that's not all the CEO of the ADL said.
To talk about TikTok.
This is the same guy.
TikTok, if yes. you will, it is the 24/7 news channel of so many of our young people, and it's like Al Jazeera on steroids, amplifying and intensifying the anti-Semitism and the anti-Zion with no repercussion.
What you just saw is that he took those ideas from the first clip and went on the news to influence public opinion. Now, I have one more clip for you.
In the United States, you are promoting to kids self-harm videos. And anti-Israel propaganda. Why is there such a dramatic difference?
That's Senator Ted Cruz arguing for a TikTok ban using the same exact talking points as Jonathan Greenblatt. Saying that we should ban TikTok because it's anti-Israel, because it's anti-Zionist. The man in that video is Senator Ted Cruz, and when I looked at who funds him, guess what I found? Ted Cruz is almost exclusively funded by pro-Israel lobbies. Of course, we have AIPAC, the Republican Jewish Coalition, and NORPAC, which is another pro-Israel lobby. The reason this bill was passed so quickly is because of the enormous influence that the pro-Israel lobby has over our politicians. They've paid them tens of millions of dollars. Our politicians serve Israel's interests, and that's clear. Instead of upholding their country's values, my country's values of free speech, our First Amendment, instead of listening to the people on TikTok, half of America is on TikTok saying, we don't support genocide, stop sending weapons, we need a ceasefire. They want to shut it down. Instead of listening to the people they represent, they want to shut us down. This app has changed my life, and it's given me the chance to change others' lives for the better. Without this app, I wouldn't be going to college this year, I don't think. And I know I'm not alone. I know there's artists and small businesses and everyday Americans who use this app for entertainment, information, to discuss things, to make money for themselves. We should not let corruption take that away from us. That's all I have to say. Thank you for watching, and have a great day.
I think he's right. I think he's right. We continue to document the downfall of this once great nation. As we surrender without a fight, as we actively destroy ourselves, really is something to behold. We're going to move on now to some other topics, including just the general collapse of America. We're collapsing in a variety of different ways, obviously morally, spiritually, population-wise. All of that is going down, but a little bit harder to quantify than, you know, the economic collapse. Obviously, we still have tens of billions of dollars to fund wars overseas, wars that really only promise to spiral into greater and greater conflict the more that we fund them, as we send $60 billion to Ukraine, only to see them hint that they're going to start striking spots deep inside Russia, meaning that Russia is going to have to step up their aggression and fulfill the thing that has never been a real danger until America pushes Russia, you know, far enough. In other words, they like Russia seemingly, I mean, from its actions and its speeches, but mostly from its actions, not interested in taking over all of Ukraine. It's never interested in expanding their territory beyond the Russian-speaking parts of the former state within Russia. But if they start launching long-range missiles from Kiev, what do you expect Russia to do? What do you think they're going to do? They're not going to just stay in the eastern provinces that they've captured and have fortified, where they were happy to, you know, rest on their laurels while the Ukraine, while Ukraine launched a counteroffensive that utterly and embarrassingly failed. No, they're going to go after Kiev next. They're going to take it even farther. They're going to do the thing that they weren't going to do, but America kept warning, oh, Russia's going to keep going. They're going to destroy all of Ukraine. Well, they haven't. They aren't going to. But if you give Ukraine long-range missiles and they start bombing Moscow, yeah, probably Russia is going to do that. And then you're going to point and go, see, we told you, but that was never going to happen until you did what you did. I know I'm not alone on this. In fact, in my corner, I have probably the greatest living American politician, Dr. Ron Paul. Let's go now to clip number 19, where Dr. Paul trashes Speaker Mike Johnson in his newest monologue. Let's watch.
When future historians go searching for the final nail in the U.S. coffin, they may well settle on the date April 20th, 2024. On that day, Congress passed legislation to fund 2.5 wars, hand what's left of our privacy over to the CIA and the NSA, and give the U.S. president the power to shut down whatever part of the internet he disagrees with. The U.S. and its allies have already sent over $300 billion to Ukraine, and the country is still losing its war with Russia. Nobody believes another $60 billion will pull a victory from the jaws of defeat. But this additional money is meant to keep up appearances until November at the expense of Americans who are forced to pay for it and Ukrainians who are forced to die for it. Speaker Johnson could not have passed these monstrosities without the full support of House Democrats. And as the majority of Republicans voted against more money for Ukraine. So in the worst example of bipartisanship, Johnson reached across the aisle, stiffed the Republican majority that elected him Speaker, and pushed through a massive gift to the warfare corporate welfare state. After the House voted to send another $60 billion to notoriously corrupt Ukraine, members waved Ukrainian flags on the House floor and chanted, "Ukraine, Ukraine." While I find it's distasteful and disgusting, in some ways it seemed fitting. And not to be outdone, the U.S. Senate on that same day passed the extension of Section 702 of the FISA Act, which not only allowed the government to continue spying on us without a warrant, but also contained new language massively expanding how they can spy on us. Many conservative voters are asking, what's the point of Republican control of the House is if the agenda is determined by Democrats? Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is given reported to have bragged to his colleagues about how easily Speaker Johnson gave Democrats everything they wanted and asked for nothing in return.
So it's about more than just Ukraine. It's about more than just Ukraine. It's about the complete, willful, gleeful capitulation that, I mean, every Republican seems to fall into. And even Mike Johnson had a very, you know, specific turn where he was against FISA warrants and 702 and then spent about 10 minutes with the CIA and then came out saying, actually, it's super important and we need to expand it. So I don't know what blackmail they presented him with. Maybe his adopted son had something to do with it. Rumors abound. I'll leave it there. Raheem Kassam asks, what the F is Mike Johnson doing in National Pulse? He quotes Napoleon by saying, when the enemy is making a false movement, we must take good care not to interrupt him. Today, it's commonly written, is never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. With that in mind, what the blank is Mike Johnson doing? No, not with his predictable capitulation to the defense industry. That move was obvious as the day is long. What's more stunning is his bizarre trip to Columbia University on Wednesday, where he squeaked into a microphone, drowned out by a cacophonous students chanting, doubtless to their chagrin and ignorance, in agreement with Steve Bannon of late, Mike, you suck. Mike, you suck. Johnson's completely arbitrary trip to New York is the very definition of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. An issue that was completely at the feet of Joe Biden and the fools in his foreign policy apparatus now appears at best as a uniparty issue and at worst as a scenario where the GOP is running interference for neoconservatism like it's 2003. I know what you're thinking. I'm thinking it too, but the left deserves itself. We should have let them suck on that all summer long. Do I feel sympathy for some students that are caught in the crossfire? Sure. But their parents, their benefactors, their college donors, staff, and in many cases, these students themselves have turned a blind eye to far left and Islamicist intolerance in the name of, well, tolerance. Why is it your, my, or Mike Johnson's job to save them from themselves? Simply speaking, it ain't. And what happens when the Columbia University president refuses to resign as Johnson demanded? The faculty will frame it as defiance against Republicans on Capitol Hill. And by proxy, though you and I know it's not true, Donald Trump. In fact, President Trump unveiled his education plan yesterday, which makes it clear the answer to this isn't trying to negotiate some pseudo Middle East peace a few blocks from Central Park. It's root and branch reform of the way these universities operate in the first instance. So I ask you again, what the blank is Mike Johnson doing when Biden's White House is under continuous fire from its once beloved baked in voters to interrupt your enemy when he's making false moves, the height of narcissism and folly, and dare I suggest, perhaps intentional? No, it's because he was told to by his Jewish donors. Because that's the most important thing. Upholding the Republic? No. Upholding the Republican Party? No. Serving the constituents that he swore an oath to serve? No. No, no, no. None of that matters. What matters is Israel gets the money it needs to wage war against the Palestinians, and universities are run exclusively by Zionists. That's the most important goal for the American government. Mike Johnson knows it. It's not a trick. There is no Democratic-Republican divide at that level or on this topic. So Raheem Kassim is exactly right. This was something that Republicans, I mean, my God, it's just another one of these things where it is a pile of gold sitting on the ground for any politician. If they actually were serious about defeating the Democrats, they would be jumping on this topic so fast. I mean, we saw the results in the primaries where tens of thousands of people, diehard Democratic voters, voted, you know, other, voted, you know, different choice. You did a write-in candidate as a protest vote against Joe Biden specifically because of his failure to rein in Israel in their genocidal murder campaign in Gaza. Every one of those people is a opportunity. Every one of those people you could speak to, Trump could do it, Johnson could do it, any Republican could do it, Greg Abbott could have done it, to say, you know what? The Republican Party is the party of free speech, and you've been against us in the past, but now you need us. So if you want to have free speech for Palestine, you better vote Republican, because the Democrats don't believe in free speech. This is what we've been warning you about. This is what we've been telling you, Democrats, for the last 10 years. Is that when you restrict speech for one, you restrict speech for all. And now your own ideology, your own restrictions of free speech are being turned on you. It's time to wake up and realize that America was founded correctly and that the First Amendment is invaluable, is beyond precious in this country. And we will defend it even if it's with people we don't agree with, even if it's against people that are our friends. We will still defend your right to free speech. Wouldn't that be a powerful argument for the Republicans? What are they doing instead? Providing cover for the Democrats and be putting themselves in the position of the big bad guys that otherwise would have been their political opponents. These people, man, my God. Donald Trump could be making hay at this point. I mean, the Jewish, you know, diaspora, the community, the organizations, they'll never vote for Donald Trump. They've exclusively worked against Donald Trump the entire time that he's been in politics. So why not, Trump? Why not come out and say, I will bring Middle East peace. I will bring Israel to heel. And I know the answer, because Israel will kill you. That's why. That's the real dirty, dark secret. It's not about money. It's not even about blackmail. It's about the fact that our intelligence agencies are unified with Mossad, and they will kill anybody up to and including the United States president who gets in their way. And they've done it before. See JFK, see General George S. Patton, see Charles Lindbergh. That's the real secret. That's the real truth behind all of this, is it really has nothing, it has little to do with money. Money is a useful tool to control certain people. But at the end of the day, if money doesn't work, they've got another option. And it's just, well, it's a couple snipers in nests along the road in Dallas. Or it's a heart attack gun. That's the truth. That's the reality. We'll move on. We'll move on, though, because we are talking about the general collapse of America, not just the collapse of our beliefs and you know, foundational principles. That is, you know, obviously not just collapsing, but being ruthlessly destroyed in front of all of our faces, as well as, you know, world peace. Just everything, just absolutely everything is being destroyed. One thing that doesn't get enough attention because it's disguised by a, you know, rise in the just thoroughly disconnected from reality stock market is the economic collapse in America. This list should help you realize what's happening in this country. They keep telling us Bidenomics is amazing. They keep telling us that inflation is down, by which they mean inflation isn't rising as fast as it was before. These are lies. But hey, BlackRock's doing great, aren't they? Isn't Goldman Sachs having a bonanza right now? So the economy must be good. How does that look for the American people? I mean, typically you think, I mean, in the old school sort of belief that the economy is actually there for the people, not the other way around, you would expect that as an economy booms, the people benefit. That's not the construction we live in, is it? From Business Insider, nearly 13,000 or 1,300 stores are closing across the U.S. in 2024. Here's a list from a person on X named Steve Loves Ammo at Steve Loves Ammo. Dollar Tree is closing 600 stores in 2024. CVS is closing 900 stores this year. Walgreens is closing 150 stores. Outback Steakhouse has closed 40 of their outlets. UPS cut 12,000 jobs this year. Citigroup is cutting 20,000. eBay is cutting 1,000. Microsoft is cutting nearly 2,000. Expedia is cutting 1,500. Cisco is cutting 4,000. Apple just cut 600. Regal Cinemas is closing 429 locations. Kroger is closing 413 stores. Foot Locker is closing 400 stores. Macy's is closing 150 stores. Walmart has closed 6 stores. Which, yeah, it's only 6, but compare that to previous years where they're opening literally dozens of stores and you get a pretty bleak picture. While the U.S. Senate has passed nearly $100 billion sent to other countries that most can't even point to on a map. Oh, and in that bill, they've laid the groundwork to ban free speech TikTok in the United States. Don't speak bad about the government or they'll use their FISA to spy on you like they did over 200,000 times in 2023 alone. We are beyond taxation without representation, America. And I remind you, when it comes to job growth with in the American people, the last year has seen a dramatic decrease in jobs. Not just a slowdown of growth, but the American people, American citizens, have lost hundreds of thousands of jobs over the last few years. The job numbers have grown, and that's happened for two reasons. One, they've all gone to illegal immigrants, they've all gone to immigrants, they've all gone to foreign board, illegal and otherwise. H-1B visas for the legal, you know, whatever else for the illegal. The TENT program with every major corporation in America conspiring together to help fund the import of and then employ and then provide the legal protection for what amounts to essentially slave labor from the third world. And then you get the H-1B visas legally to replace the skilled work and the educated class in America. just tens of thousands of jobs disappearing, stores disappearing. But I guess that's fine. I guess everything will be ordered from Amazon now. I guess this is just the next step in just ending life as we know it in general. It's already kind of sad and pathetic when you look back at, you know, books written just, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago. We have a lot of the, I think Richard Scarry, I think is his name. Richard Scarry books. I've talked about them before. And they'll just show a sort of scene of a town. You know, these are educational books for little kids. It doesn't have morals. It just sort of has, you know, instruction. Here's what a supermarket looks like. You know, let's look at the town square. Look, here's the fire department. They fight fires. Here's the police. They arrest criminals. Here's the crosswalk. He helps the children cross the street. And even now I'm looking at this going, man, this world doesn't exist anymore. There's no town square I can go to and have the little the butcher, the baker, the cheese shop, the cafe. I mean, that doesn't exist where I live. We got supermarkets, we got Super Targets and Walmart monstrosities. So already it's like I'm teaching my kid about some fallen civilization that doesn't exist anymore. Where I'm like, see, there's the police office, and it's this little pig dressed in a little police hat, like handing candy to kids. And it's like, that's not what our police look like anymore, Billy. Our police look like paramilitary terrorists now. You know, not exactly the fun-loving. So already we're in this world that is just like unrecognizable from the very recent past. What's going to be, you know, what's going to happen when my kid is reading these stories to his kid? It's like, yeah, there used to be things called stores. There used to be places where people gathered in real life. And he's talking to him through some like headset, and his kid looks like a dinosaur, you know, like just like whatever godforsaken horror show that humanity is diving headlong first into. I don't know what it looks like, but it doesn't look like anything I want to be involved in. Doesn't look like a nice little town with its town square and its, you know, professionals, you know, doing their job. It looks like a giant robotic warehouse with a bunch of slave people with masks on being directed by robots to fulfill orders for strangers 10,000 miles away. It looks like an inhuman nightmare world, a dystopian, hellish, stainless steel and gaudy plastic torture device. But maybe it's an accident. Maybe it's just because it's all like everything's crazy, you know? Maybe it's just like, America is just struggling, you know? It's like, our economy is so bad. What are we going to do? You know, maybe it's not a plan. Maybe all of this is just happening simultaneously in complete coordination by complete coincidence, you know? Yeah, maybe that's what's happening. Maybe none of this is directed by anybody, and maybe there's no explanation as to why in 5 years the youth went from 3% to 25% gay, you know? Maybe that just happens all of a sudden for no reason and nothing you can point to. You know, maybe the world as foreseen by the World Economic Forum, where you will own nothing and you will be happy, where everything you interact with or everything you obtain will be temporarily rented on credit that you'll never pay off, in the ultimate and complete and holistic paradigm of the company store. You know, maybe it's just a coincidence that everything is happening directly in pursuit of this goal. Maybe it's a sheer coincidence that all of the physical locations are shutting down. Maybe we're under attack. Maybe humanity is being destroyed on purpose. Maybe the life worth living that was brought to us by Western civilization is a little bit too inconvenient for the people that would rather have a bunch of soulless automatons doing their bidding. And they'd rather have a construction like China, in which, you know, if you want to try to kill yourself, they'll build a suicide net to steal that final escape from you. Or maybe it's a coincidence. I don't know. It could be one of these. It could be, I don't know. Well, we don't know. We just don't know. We don't know. course we know. Of course this is all obvious. All of this is happening simultaneously, as designed, as organized, as intended. None of this is unintended consequences. None of this is accidental. They're doing it on purpose and explicitly to get the pain and the outrage and the failure that Americans need to inspire them to give up their previous system and accept communism. Really not that complicated. Just brutal beyond belief. And you know what? In this note, we're running out of time here. I'll show it on the other side. The mayor of, I think it's Portland, was doing an interview on the street when he was mugged by a homeless person and oilfield rando on Twitter put some lovely classical music behind it and created a truly modern piece of art, a meme for the ages. We'll show that on the other side. In the meantime, I do want to remind you that InfoWars will be here arguing for your basic human rights, for the American dream, for justice, reality, truth, and God, as long as you support us at InfoWarsStore.com. InfoWarsStore.com is the only way we get funding, because who else would fund me to say this? The American people. That's the only ones we got. We still have a lot more stories to cover before we welcome our guest. We'll be joined in studio by Bart Sibrel, filmmaker and author who is known for his questioning of the Apollo moon landings. I'm excited to talk to him in the third hour in studio, but I got some more videos to go to. And this is, again, in the topic of American collapse. And I think it pairs well with this story from Zero Hedge. Cities' doom loops are even worse than you imagined. A correspondent who prefers to remain anonymous sent me this account of doom loop that's playing out in many American cities. The correspondent makes the case that the doom loop is not limited to specific cities, but is a universal dynamic in all U.S. cities due to the core causes of the doom loop: financialization and the multi-decade decay of cities' core industrial economic purpose slash mission. I have edited the text slightly with the correspondent's approval. The context of the doom loop is the process and politics of this decay and our second-order results of central bank easy money, free fiat. That led to the financialization becoming the city's core function and the subsequent loss of the city's previous mission. The people living in the cities just haven't gotten the message yet. As such, there's no reversing this process until the centralization of capital itself is reversed. The typical media articles on metropolitan doom loops makes it seem like it's not every city headed down this path. Now the financialization does not require physical presence. Every city above a certain size will share the same experience. There will be vocal variations which impact the trend, such as potential utility of a large pool of voters, i.e. vote farm, but the decline is part and parcel of financial, quote, virtualization. It is inevitable. Even hosting one of the 12 central reserve banks won't save you. The process, when a city loses its purpose but persists due to inertia, follows a basic pattern. We'll get into that pattern here in just a second. But let's first look at the outcome of this collapse. One kind of funny, you know, manifestation of what all of America is experiencing. This time it's a mayor from a random Californian city being confronted by a homeless man in the middle of the interview. Oilfield Rando on Twitter took the time to put a little Chopin behind it, a little classical music to give it the, you know, somber and impact it truly deserves. Let's watch.
Yeah, but this is the question.
I would not let him go in there if we can. I don't know.
So I'm doing an interview, sir.
He's threatening him. I'm doing an interview, sir.
Oh, yeah, I'm moving on. I work right there. I'm talking on the phone. You got a problem?
Yeah, we're just talking
to you. Okay, cool. I appreciate you, Mike. Yeah, Yeah, I'm gonna go do what the I'm gonna do right before you walked up. Sir. You know, like, either way it goes. First of all, hold up. Hold up.
No.
I'll smack you right now.
He is now fighting the mayor's security detail while the mayor fiddles with his phone just a few feet away. Oh, there you go. There's the punch. I don't know if I've ever seen a more accurate portrayal of America. The soy boy mayor doing nothing to intervene. The black guy interrupting everybody and then being offended. And then fighting the security guard that does nothing to prevent this from happening, only jumping into action after the attack is fully begun. And the woman makes sure her hair looks good because she knows it's being filmed. Everybody else just sort of wandering around like it's not happening. So three dudes, one of them is actually fighting. Oh, four dudes. Four dudes and a lady. Only one of them actually confronting the dude that attacked them, while everybody else sort of wanders around like they can't tell what's going on. This is America in 2024. Perhaps displayed in more stark and illuminating visuals than I've ever seen before. They're all just standing around watching these two men fight. Their friend and security guard and some random dude. Nobody helps. Nobody steps in. There's like, oh, he's got it. No, he's definitely got it. It's fine. No, we're calling somebody. Don't worry. We're calling somebody. Anybody want to step in and help? There's like 10 of you and there's one of him. Why is there only one of you doing anything? What is wrong with America? Now more people are just sort of wandering around. I mean, my God. Somebody just biking by. Yep, America 2024. I think, you know, if you showed this video to an alien, they could diagnose basically every problem America has right now. It's all right here. It's all on display. Big fat tourist wandering by in the background.
I know.
Oh, excuse me. Beep, beep. Bye. This place sucks. We suck. America! What happens when your entire civilization is split down the middle between psychopathic, out-of-control criminal thugs and soy boy twinks? What happens? That does. I mean, I'm amazed. I'm amazed that nobody even remotely tried to help the dude fighting the guy. Wait, what the hell's going on here? That woman is literally standing there with a metal bar in her hand. Like, gee. Call the authorities. Call the police.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's fighting him right now. Oh, it's like right in front of me. Yeah, some guy. He's a darker complexion. Well, I don't want to say he's black, but... Yeah, no, they're fighting. And he's trying to do sort of a wraparound leg thing. He's going to bring him down. No, it's right here.
So let's return to this Zero Hedge article. City's doom loops are even worse than you imagine. Here's the process when a city loses its purpose but persists due to inertia. Follows this basic pattern. One, corporate consolidation costs the city its financial base as Fortune 100 companies are sold to conglomerates closer to the centers of finance. This is one more second-order effect of easy money. Global corporations can easily finance the acquisition of multi-billion-dollar companies. Which again, is, I mean, you know, we could spend a whole show on just this point alone, on the way that corporations have moved into a globalist model, and that there used to be some... I mean, it started off with, like, Andrew Carnegie, like, building the most beautiful buildings you've ever seen, endowing libraries that stand to this day as a, you know, one of the most awe-inspiring landmarks in New York City, right? Actually taking civic responsibility super seriously. And sure, it went off the rails a little bit. That quickly morphed into, you know, turns out we can control these people if we, you know, just fund the right things. Right. So the Rockefellers and the Carnegies that start off with like, I'm going to build a beautiful library, have descended at this point into we're going to turn medicine into a profit machine. So, you know, I'm not blind to what the reality is. But at the same time, there was this civic responsibility. I hate to take it back. I hate to take it all the way back, but, well, the South used to have this in quite a, powerful degree. That's different. Even, up until like the 80s or whatever, there was like a lot of concern from corporations. Like they were like, this is our headquarters. And so like Houston's a fantastic example. Houston has some of the best museums in the world. The Museum of Art, the Museum of Modern Art, the Museum of Natural History is incredible. This huge sprawling complex, the zoo, all of that came from oil money. It was all the oil executives just making money hand over fist, and their wives would just spend all day organizing galas and fundraisers and charity auctions, and they would raise money, and they would endow the city with these beautiful works of art or beautiful museums or parks or whatever else. Rice University was an endowment to the city. That goes away with globalism. That's just one of the reasons why cities are collapsing in America right now. We get into the law, the warfare of law that's going on in just a second, with the combined multiple prosecutions of Trump having very big days today, while simultaneously, innocent Republicans trying to do their patriotic duty are being indicted by tyrannical leftist authorities across the country. We'll get to that in just a moment. I do want to show this video first. It is video 32. This is what you can do with a 1-acre homestead. Just a reminder that with all of this going down simultaneously and with the forces of the world working feverishly to enslave or destroy the population, now is the time to become self-sufficient, because there may not be much time left to do so. Let's go now to this video.
What would I do with a 1-acre homestead? I can picture it now. I'd start with a 500 square foot garden, plus 1,000 square feet for produce to sell, with room to grow. Pun intended. I'd have a permaculture orchard with 10 trees, co-planted with perennial root vegetables, and I'd put sea kale and other shade-tolerant greens under the trees. I'd plant a nitrogen-fixing cover crop like alfalfa, and I'd border it all with raspberry, blueberries, blackberries, and grapes. There'd be chickens for eggs and compost, and angora rabbits for fertilizer and wool. They could eat the alfalfa I grew in the orchard. There'd be goats for milk and cheese and beehives for honey and pollination. I'd have aquaculture tanks for tilapia and leafy greens. I'd have a rainwater catchment system for irrigation and a gray water runoff from the house. I'd fill the rest with sunflowers and zinnias to sell, plus some mint and lavender for making essential oils. Can you see it? You don't need a lot of land to homestead. You just need to be able to see the whole picture.
That's the American dream. It is in direct contradiction to everything the globalists want for us, including, destroying our cities, which were once lovely and largely crime-free, but are universally descending into filth and chaos. But, I mean, they are not being shy about it. The move now is trying to get rid of backyard gardens. Oregon is trying to pass a law where it'll define anybody growing anything in their yard that's edible will therefore come under the jurisdiction of the agencies that monitor and control, like, for-profit farms, and they'll be able to shut you down or tax you harder or apply ridiculous rules about where your rainwater goes. But that's in, coordination with and perfectly aligned with the World Economic Forum saying that growing tomatoes in your backyard is worse for the environment than buying them from Indonesia. It's absurd, but it points to what their ultimate plan is, which is to deprive you of any ability to sustain yourself and be independent. They want you dependent. They want you relying on them for everything, and they want their food produced like it comes out of a factory. And I want little farms with, farmers trading goods with each other, selling raw milk at the farmer's market. That's anathema to them. What they want is a giant factory with 20,000 pigs living within an inch of one another, being, forcibly created, shoved full of every godforsaken antibiotic and growth hormone they can imagine, fed GMO corn, but probably, you know, fortified with cricket meat, and it'll cost you half a day's wages. That's their ultimate goal. And it's everything we stand against. So go to InfoWarsStore.com, not just to support us and this message and this resistance against the tyrannical, robotic, anti-human agenda that the globalists are openly and actively and powerfully involved in, because it does do that when you go to InfoWarsStore.com. It keeps us on the air. You are the only reason we're on the air. InfoWarsStore.com is the only way that we get funding at all, which is why I can say the things that I say. No one else would, you know, fund me to do this, but the American people will, because they know what's true. But you can also get 10% off things like storable food and water filters, which will be necessary in the coming tribulations. There's also seeds and all sorts of like books and things to help you get started on your path or continue to expand your homesteading if that's what you're interested in. But with that, let's move to Trump and lawfare overall. Trump faces critical legal day in hush money trial and before the Supreme Court. The CNN article relates how Trump is sitting in a New York courtroom having to deal with this entirely fraudulent charge of paying hush money. Again, I remind you exactly the same thing that Hillary Clinton's campaign got doing, only in that case, it was to fund the Steele dossier, to launch an illegal investigation, to try to destroy her presidential candidate rival in cooperation with the deep state, totally unlawful spy agencies. And in Trump's case, it was because he was being blackmailed for a affair he had 10 years ago. Regardless, Hillary Clinton got fined $100,000 that the DNC paid, and Donald Trump is facing years in prison because this has nothing to do with justice. This is a blatant power move by the deep state. As they make it clear to everybody, if you stand up against them, they will break any laws, they will violate any norms in order to get you. So he's doing that. He's sitting in the New York courtroom having to deal with that. But simultaneously, U.S. Supreme Court justices are hearing oral arguments in a sweeping immunity case that could have profound implications for his legal fate and poses never-before-resolved questions about the powers of the presidency. The double court date will represent yet another unfathomable twist in the saga of the presumptive Republican nominee, who is again stretching America's judicial and constitutional systems to their limit as he runs to claim the White House. Oh, is he? Remember I talked about this yesterday? They have to frame everything like it's Trump's fault. So by defending himself, he's now the bad guy. Because he is not submitting and pleading guilty and going to jail, it's his fault that these unprecedented questions are being asked, that the American judicial system is being stretched to the breaking point. It's his fault, apparently, that he's being charged with laws, with crimes nobody else has ever been charged with. That the deep state is actively coordinating with DAs and special prosecutors around the country to go after Trump for anything and everything that they could possibly lay on his shoulders. It's his fault for existing. It's his fault for opposing them. If he didn't, you know, become president, they would have never had to do this. It's his fault, is what CNN wants you to think. This is that one of those rhetorical little tricks they play that actually impacts people. People don't realize like what's happening when they read stuff like that. They're just left with the impression, man, this Trump guy sure is causing trouble for everybody. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Somebody punches you in the face and writes an article about how you broke their fingers. Donald Trump prosecution appears fatally flawed, according to legal experts. The story from Newsweek. Legal experts have raised concerns about whether prosecutors can convince a jury to convict Donald Trump in the Stormy Daniels trial. Several experts have pointed to the lack of clear evidence that Trump was engaged in election fraud. Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, is the first former president in the United States, in the history of the United States, to stand trial in a criminal case. He has pled not guilty to 34 counts of falsifying business records to high payments to adult film star Stormy Daniels and former Playboy model Karen McDougal. The Manhattan District Attorney seeks to prove that before the 2016 presidential election, Trump paid or discussed paying the two women not to disclose affairs with them, thereby influencing voters as to his character. He denies affairs with either women. But that's not even the case. It's not illegal to pay somebody not to go public, especially if they're the ones extorting you. It's weird that that's what this is about, but it's clearly not. Boston University legal professor Sugarman wrote in the New York Times on Tuesday that Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has made a historic mistake in taking the case. Under the headline, "I thought the Bragg case against Trump was a legal embarrassment. Now I think it's a historic mistake." Sugarman wrote that the case has no clear examples of election fraud. Quote, "Their vague allegation about a criminal scheme to corrupt the 2016 presidential election has me more concerned than ever about their unprecedented use of state law and their persistent avoidance of specifying an election crime or valid theory of fraud," he wrote. It's really not that complicated. It is completely invalid. It is completely arbitrary and political. And it should be terrifying to anybody that actually enjoys living in a country that has the rule of law. This is the destruction of the rule of law itself, wholesale, using Trump as the excuse. In the same way that they're destroying free speech by using the Hamas protesters as an excuse. In the same way that they always create the situation that they then use to destroy your rights and the functioning of our government. Arizona has now indicted 18 people, including Giuliani and Meadows, for their attempt to overturn Trump's loss to Joe Biden in the 2020 election. Because it's not just Trump, it's everybody vaguely associated with him, even American heroes like Rudy.
The Japanese are normally not inclined to protest, but thousands of them are now marching together in protest of the deadly experimental shots and the WHO pandemic treaty. They are being ignored by their government and media, and they deserve our recognition and support. Launching a class action lawsuit for the families who lost loved ones to the deadly shots and for those whose lives have been destroyed. And the plaintiffs are being heard as they share their painful stories. Medical professor of Osaka City University School, Misayasu Inoue, has recently delivered a warning to the world that Japan has contracted with the WHO to develop a new vaccine for Disease X, which is expected to be deployed worldwide later this year.
A plan was set up to shorten the time to develop vaccines, which usually takes longer than 10 years, to less than 1 year. Operation Warp Speed. This operation was used to cover up the misconception of the genetic vaccines under the pretext of saving time. And an extremely dangerous medicine was selected. I believe that the fraudulent use of experimental gene therapy to healthy people, particularly to healthy children, is an extreme violation of human rights. The Japanese government is the first in the world to approve a new type of vaccine called self-replication replicon vaccine, and plans to start to supply it this fall and winter, The Ministry of Economy, Trade, and Industry is providing a huge amount of subsidies for this project. And the factories to produce new vaccines are being built one after another in Japan. Furthermore, the Japanese government is currently soliciting large-scale clinical trials worth $900 million from pharmaceutical companies that are taking on the challenge of developing vaccines to prepare for the next pandemic by disease X, proposed during the Davos conference this year. If Japan were to become a vaccine perpetrator, it would leave irreparable harm to future generations. Therefore, the actions of the Japanese government must be stopped by international collaborations. It is difficult to stop this movement because it is now politically hopeless to change the situation of the Japanese government. The message I would like to convey to the world is that when disease X occurs in the future, you should never trust the Japanese-made vaccine.
A final draft of the pandemic treaty is expected to be presented for adoption at the 77th World Health Assembly in May 2024, which will undoubtedly be setting the world up for another planned assault under the guise of world health. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Joining me in studio is Bart Sibrel. He is an award-winning filmmaker, writer, and investigative journalist who's best known for his skepticism of the Apollo moon landings. Throughout his work, he has revealed official CIA code name for the real Apollo project, the military base where the first staged moon landing was filmed, and the names of 15 United States government scientists and officials who were in attendance for the moon landing falsification, some of whom are still alive today. You can find Bart on YouTube at BartSibrel1 or by visiting his website, Sibrel.com. On YouTube, again, that's Bart Sibrel 1. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Harrison. How are you?
I'm great. It's my pleasure to have you. And I, and our audience probably knows, I tend to believe the moon landing story, but I'm open-minded, and there's a special place in my heart for it because I remember it like it was yesterday. I was probably in third grade, staying up late at a friend's house, and some documentary came on about the moon landing being fake, and it just blew my mind. I mean, I had never, you know, as a kid, I'd never thought about something like that being fake, and it stuck with me ever since then. I still remember exactly where I was, where the TV was. I mean, it was such a sort of earth-shaking moment for me to realize that the moon landing could have been fake, and I imagine a lot of people feel that way. What got you first into looking into the moon landing?
Well, I believed it like everybody else, and maybe more so. I practically worshipped the moon landing. My father was in the Air Force, and he got a VIP package of 9x12 color prints. And, of course, we moved every 2 years. And wherever we moved, it was like a prominent place. I thought it was glorious.
Yeah.
And then when I was 14, I saw an interview with a gentleman by the name of Bill Kaysing, who had second highest security clearance next to Von Braun, who edited memos from him back to the Pentagon because English wasn't his primary language. And he read a memo that he warned them the odds of going on the first attempt were 1 in 10,000 chance.
Wow.
And that they bluffed, like in a poker game. The difference is, and I appreciate your admission to it, is, you know, whoever killed JFK, he's still dead. It's
right.
Just a matter of who did it and why. Or 9/11. All those people are dead regardless of who did it and why. This
right.
is different. This is a positive lie. And people don't want to give it up. The fact is, people have to wake up and smell the manure. You know, Glenn Beck, I believe, is very sincere, but sincerely wrong. He, you know, worships the astronauts, but they're accessories to homicide, as we'll discuss in a little bit. In his mind, I know America has gotten bad, but at least we went to the moon.
Right.
And people have to realize it is that bad. There was no independent press coverage. No eyewitnesses other than three military people. And Eugene Krantz, the flight director, said that a person in the command center can tell no difference whatsoever between a simulation and a real flight. So if they can't tell the difference, how can we?
Right.
And the idea that because 400,000 people, including secretaries and food service truck people, were involved proves, you know, that it's real because you can't keep a secret. Well, 129,500 people were involved in making the atomic bomb during World War II, and only 8 people knew what they were making. And so that's like saying what a teller at Wells Fargo knows about the corruption in the bank is the same as what the CEO knows.
Right.
And there's only three people going up, no independent press coverage. We have to take their word for it. And when I found this classified footage, you can see it on the homepage of Sabrell.com, and a funny thing happened on the way to the moon. A $1 million movie financed by someone who builds rockets for NASA, who wishes to remain anonymous, who gave me the money.
Okay.
And so his stock won't go down. And he knows they faked it. And he gave me the money to make this film. We found classified footage, which we can show, of them faking being halfway to the moon using a 1-foot model of the Earth, dated 2 days into the flight, with a third track of audio of the CIA telling them to fake a 4-second radio delay because they stayed in Earth orbit the entire time and they would talk immediately back and forth. They were supposed to be halfway to the moon. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh my gosh, they really did fake the moon landing. It's not a theory. And then my book talks about an eyewitness. We have a man who, when he was dying, fearing the judgment of God, said, I'm a murderer. And his son said, you know, who did you kill, Dad? And he said, well, I killed a coworker at Cannon Air Force Base where I was chief of security. We have the testimony of the son queued up as well. And they brought in the military police. They wrote down, well, we need to tell the next of kin that this guy didn't disappear or die in an accident, that he was murdered. Then they asked him, well, why did you kill him? And he said, well, because he was going to squeal about the moon landing fraud, which we both helped film at Cannon Air Force Base, the special ops headquarters, on June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of 1968. President Johnson showed up out of curiosity the first day and gave the chief of security my source and my book at Sabrell.com, a list of 15 people who were allowed in. Neil Armstrong's on the list. Buzz Aldrin is on the list. Eugene Kranz is on the list. Von Braun is on the list. And these people, I witnessed it. He kept that as a souvenir. We published this in the book. So there's four basic proofs that they didn't go to the moon. The first is logic of deduction. Today, with 54 years better rockets and computers, the farthest that NASA can send an astronaut into space is 1,000th the distance to the moon. Do you understand that? Back in 1969, all of NASA had 1,000,000th the computing power of a cell phone.
Right.
And yet they claim they sent astronauts ahead of schedule on the first attempt with 1,000,000th the computing power of a cell phone, 1,000 times farther into space than they can send them today with 50 years better technology. So what they're really claiming is for the first time in the history of the world, there was 1,000 times greater technology in the past and in the future. But that's impossible. The second proof is the eyewitness testimony. The third proof is that footage of them faking being halfway to the moon. And the fourth proof is shadows intersecting. If you want to show that picture clip, we could prove the moon landing fraud in one photograph. And we're showing it right now. So on the left-hand side, and you can test this for yourself, go out in your parking lot at work at lunchtime or your front yard on a cloudless day, a sunny day, and you'll see that shadows are always parallel in sunlight. The sun is 1,000,000 times bigger than the Earth. It's 93 million miles away. It's going to cast shadows in the same direction over an entire continent. But this picture on the right-hand side that they claim was taken from the last trip to the moon, if you could zoom out just a little bit on that, you'll see that the astronaut shadow runs at 12 o'clock and a rock 5 feet away. The shadow is at 9 o'clock, a 90-degree difference. Now, I'm a professional filmmaker for almost 40 years. My job is to make fake scenes look real.
Right.
The only way that those shadows can be intersecting at 90 degrees from objects 5 feet apart, where they claim it's in sunlight, which is always parallel, is if it's an electrical light. So that means that the picture they claim was on the moon was filmed with an electrical light, which means they're on Earth. And that's the last mission to the moon. I thought, well, maybe they faked the first one and later figure out how to do it. No. They faked them all. They can't go to the moon today. That's why there's mannequins orbiting the moon. Do you see that? They can play golf and drive cars on the moon with 1 millionth the computing power of a cell phone 50 years ago, and today they can only send mannequins to orbit the moon. And if people weren't attached to this so emotionally, they would see the truth for what it is. I even talked to a college professor who said if Neil Armstrong himself confessed on national TV that Bart Sobrell is right, the moon landings were filmed at Cannon Air Force Base, the professor said he'd still think he walked on the moon anyway.
I think that's probably true. And I have some questions about some of the technology stuff, but I know you have a lot of videos that we want to get to, and I haven't seen some of this proof. So, you know, it's been a while since I really delved into the moon landings, and I haven't seen any of this stuff. So some of it sounds pretty convincing, and I think we should go to some of it. What do you want to start with?
Yeah, let's show this footage, the fake footage. I call it the window shot. This is the footage we uncovered of them faking being halfway to the moon from Earth orbit. They were on the rocket. That way they could go up in front of witnesses, splash down in front of witnesses, and have real zero-gravity footage of the tuna sandwich floating by. But in fact, they never left Earth orbit. And what a surprise, 54 years later, they still can't leave Earth orbit. That's why there's mannequins orbiting the moon. And so this footage shows them faking being halfway to the moon. If you want to cue it up there at about 10:06.
Which one is this?
This is clip 2 from the email I sent you. And you'll first hear Neil Armstrong lie to the public. They only aired about 10 seconds of this. I got the unedited reel. At the beginning, it says, do not show to the public. And it's 1 hour of them doing a special effect shot over and over and over again.
Okay.
They're using a 1-foot model of the Earth to pretend that they're halfway to the moon. And for the part that they intended to show, Neil Armstrong says, hey, I'm calling in from 130,000 miles out. You'll see like a mostly black screen with a little blue ball Earth in it. And they say that there's only one window that faces the Earth, and the lens of the camera is right up against that glass, as it would have to be. In fact, the cameras at the back of the spacecraft, they turned out all the lights, and you see part of the Earth outside of the circular window. But with all of it black around it, it looks like the Earth floating in space. It's very clever. They even insert a little crescent piece of black material into it to fake out the Terminator line between night and day. And if you're ready, you can go ahead and hit play on that.
And this is from your movie called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. So
you can watch that. In its entirety at Sobrell.com. Now, that's not queued up right. If you want to go to 10:06 in the film, that's just the opening of the film to kind of show the history of what's going on in the world there.
Yeah, we have the times on here, so we can prompt these up. So they were in space. They were in orbit filming Earth from orbit. But they were saying they were significantly farther than they actually were.
That's right. We even have a third track of audio of the CIA prompting them to fake a 4-second radio delay because they're only about 250 miles above the Earth. And I would say they would say, hello, how are you? I'm doing fine. How are you? And so that would give away the fact that they're really close to the Earth. So we even have at the beginning of a clip, a third track of audio, which apparently was fed into an earpiece in Neil Armstrong. He would hear NASA ask a question, the CIA would count off 4 seconds, and then after the 4 seconds, we hear talk, and then Neil Armstrong speaks. We have that queued up as well.
That's amazing. Yeah.
What you saw, I know it was a little bizarre clip there for a few seconds, but we were trying to demonstrate what was really going on in the world, people starving.
Right.
That was what that clip was of the woman with the child, and yet here in America, they're drinking beer and watching people go to the moon. Even if you could go to the moon, is that really the best use of money?
Right.
And so when you really realize it's not a theory that they faked it, but they really did fake it, it's a spiritual symbolism to it. You know, the Tower of Babel was built to boast, the Bible says, and it was never finished. And then they built the largest machine in 1912. It was called the Titanic. And they said in print, it's the ship that God himself could not sink.
Right.
Never made one voyage. Tower of Babel never finished. And then Richard Nixon, who didn't even have the guts to show up for the launch. Can you imagine? Japanese president there, German president there. He doesn't show up because he knows it's fake. And it could be exposed and he'd look even worse, right? He said, knowing they weren't there, putting a man on the moon is second in greatness only to the creation of the universe.
Yeah. So what would have been? I mean, obviously, this was during the Cold War and there was the space race going on. So, you know, it was a sort of a blue ribbon for America saying we got to the moon first. But, I mean, is that enough to explain? Because, I mean, this is a huge psyop that they're pulling on the entire world. What would be the motivation for that?
Well, you know, when they asked President Clinton, why did he have an affair? Of course, he denied it 20 times first.
Well, like depends that, on what like, the definition of is. Yeah, I mean, right. That's perfectly reasonable.
You know, everything on Wikipedia obviously says we went to the moon. There's an answer for everything, just like a defense team for a guilty client. Nevertheless, the fact is they didn't go. And when Clinton was asked, why did you have that affair? He said, because I could, meaning because he could get away with it. And that's why they faked the moon landing, because they're arrogant. You know, Bobby Kennedy Jr., right? He has more access to the JFK files than Oliver Stone does.
Really?
And it's his researched opinion that his uncle, President Kennedy, was murdered by the CIA. Then you have Robert McNamara. He was defense secretary during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. Before he died, he had something to get off his chest. He said the public was against entering the Vietnam War, and just like they didn't want to enter World War II before Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So he and the CIA got together and said, we need a Pearl Harbor incident. They created a fake attack by a North Vietnamese ship on an American ship called the Gulf of Tonkin incident that Congress passed a law. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution to start the war legally, he admitted it never happened. The CIA and him made it up.
Right.
My point is, if the federal government, which is highly, highly corrupt, is willing to murder their own duly elected president, willing to kill 58,220 of their own soldiers in a war without cause, I don't think they're going to have a problem faking a video image. Do you?
Morally, no.
Yeah. It's that people don't want to give it up. The glory, the pride. Pride is simply the unwillingness to admit that I'm wrong. Just like that college professor. Can you imagine? He thinks as a 10-year-old, watching it on television from his living room, he knows better than the man who was there. Mm. He said, if Neil Armstrong confessed, I'd still think he walked on the moon anyway.
Right.
Well, that's what we're up against.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was a symbol of... I remember we were talking, I was talking with my wife's family and we were talking about sort of when would you want to live in all of history? And I remember her dad was like, I would want to be a part of the Apollo moon landings because there's something so powerful about so many people, so many experts, a whole of society coming together for this one object and this one goal and this one sort of glorious, even if kind of pointless endeavor that I think you're right. It's something about it speaks to people. And there is obviously an unwillingness to give that up, you know, or even entertain the idea that it might have been fake.
Now, if your engineers want to tell me if you have that queued up,
let me know when you have that.
You could show the window shot of them faking being halfway to the moon. It's at 10:06, and a funny thing happened on the way to the moon to 11:25. Or, if you want, we can jump ahead to the son's testimony about his father's participation in the moon landing.
We're ready with clip number two.
Okay. So on the left, we're going to hear the audio first. So if you want to play the audio, Neil Armstrong is saying on the right-hand side, this is the Earth floating in space. He says, we're calling in from 130,000 miles out. He's lying. He's in Earth orbit at 250 miles out, not 130,000. On the left is the same shot, the unedited footage. And you'll see it's really the window of the spacecraft with the camera at the back of the spacecraft instead of up against the glass like he lied. Here's Michael Collins removing part of the special effect in front of the window where they put a fake Terminator line in front of the window. And that's a work light you can see there. And so when the lights come up, you see that they are faking being halfway to the moon using the window. Here's an outtake where Buzz Aldrin's arm gets in front of the window. But if that's the Earth floating in space, then that's the arm of God. You see, so, and you, I'm about to show them side by side again. And again on the right, that's the footage that's in all the NASA documentaries of Neil Armstrong claiming to be halfway to the moon. The lights come up and you see it's really been the window the entire time that they have been mocked up to make it look like the Earth floating in space. It's very clever. Had I not seen the unedited version, I would think that it was real. But we have the unedited version that at the beginning of it, it says, do not show to the public. This is a classified reel of fake photography. Two NBC news directors agreed this proves beyond a doubt that the moon missions are fake. My greatest critic says it, they are faking being halfway to the moon.
Right. I mean, I think that evidence is pretty
so
rock solid.
Why would you fake being halfway to the moon if you really could go halfway to the moon? You would just show the real Earth out the window.
Right.
You wouldn't make a fake Earth, right? And if they can't go halfway to the moon, it means they can't leave Earth orbit. And here we are, 50 years later, they still can't leave Earth orbit. So the first news director, get this, I'm working for NBC News. He says, this absolutely proves we didn't go to the moon. I said, well, when are we going to broadcast it? He says, I can't do that.
Right.
I'm not going to go down in history as the man who caused the next civil war.
Right.
10 years go by, we get a new news director at NBC. They fly me to New York. They put me up in the Waldorf Astoria. They pay me thousands of dollars for the exclusive license of that footage, which you agreed is the crew of Apollo 11 faking being halfway to the moon from Earth orbit. They said, we're going to break the story nationwide. They interview me. It's done. It's in the can. They call me up and say, I got some bad news. Well, what is it? We got a threatening phone call from the United States federal government asking us not to broadcast the program. We're not going to broadcast it. You can keep your money.
Wow.
You see that?
Yeah.
This is the linchpin for bringing down the corrupt federal government. They say the Kennedy assassination witness list, they killed 200 people to cover it up. That's what they say. 9/11, 3,000. I mean, 3,000 architects and engineers say it's mechanically impossible for a pinhole airplane. Look at
right.
Oklahoma City bombing. Half the building blown away, still stands. You see? And so they're very outrageous in what they're doing. And so we have to see that they are willing to fake the moon landing. It's not too outrageous of a thing to say.
Yeah, well, they're doing it right now. We're funding a Ukraine war that has no purpose, and we're supporting Israel. And they're, so, yeah, the fact that, I mean, the federal government sees no qualms, has no qualms at all about eliminating human life by the tens of thousands if it is necessary to fulfill their ends. So I totally get that. Should we go to clip three here?
Let's just go ahead and skip ahead. I mean, if you want to hear, how much time do we have? Is there a
clock? We have about a minute 30 left in this segment.
We have until 11 o'clock?
Well, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, if you want to hear talk, then play clip number three at 34:23 in the film. Now, basically, they're in Earth orbit. They're supposed to be halfway to the moon, so there'd be a two-second radio delay, they estimated, and 2 seconds coming back. So the first we're going to hear NASA say the TV picture looks great. They didn't even get it. It was screened first. And then they count off 1, 2, 3, 4. And then we hear a third track of audio that's not NASA, that's not the astronauts, that has the walkie-talkie kind of sound. It's the CIA. And it's very clear. They say, talk. They're basically telling him not to speak until we tell you to, so that we can create a fake 4 second radio delay. You can go ahead and play that if you want with the volume up.
Houston, Goldstone says that the TV looks great. Over.
Okay, Roger.
And there you go. When I saw that, I got goosebumps. I'm like, wait a minute, who's this third party of audio? Why are they not wanting him to speak until 4 seconds go by? Then I realized that's the window. The lights come up. They're faking being halfway to the moon. The next clip, this is fascinating.
Hold on. We got it. All right, stay tuned, folks. The next clip is going to be a bombshell. Stay with us. Bart Sibrel in studio with us. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back, folks. Bart Sibrel is my guest in studio, an award-winning filmmaker, writer, and investigative journalist. We're showing clips from his film, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. And that was your first film, but you have a follow-up to that, right?
Yeah, there's the Astronauts Gone Wild film, where I got punched by Buzz Aldrin.
Right.
And there's a segment we have at the end, if we have time, we'll show it, where I showed the fake footage to an astronaut, Edgar Mitchell, in his home on a monitor. And we film his reaction. He turns beet red. Where did you get this? Literally kicks me from behind as I'm packing up my gear.
Oh, so when you said he kicked you out of your house, you've been literally kicked you.
Well, yeah, he kicked me out of his house, literally assaulted me. So my camera guy's really upset and startled. I'm a startled. I leave a high-quality wireless microphone on him. And the camera guy, for his, forgets to hit stop record. So while the camera's in the back seat of the rental car, we're recording the private conversations of the astronaut and his son. And they're discussing about me, whether or not to have me killed by the CIA. Do you want to call the CIA and have him whacked? Which would not be necessary if they really went to the moon. If we have time, we'll show that. The next clip is Kelly Smith.
Okay.
Here's a guy working on the Orion project, which is kind of part of the same equipment of the Artemis project, which promised to have men orbiting the moon in 2018, 100% behind schedule. They can only put mannequins orbiting the moon. And that's because radiation. There's a huge radiation field most people don't know about that doesn't start until about 1,000 miles above the Earth, and it extends an additional 30,000 miles. So you'd be almost an hour and a half in it going to the moon and an hour and a half coming back. This clip as of Kelly Smith from the Orion Project. They sent up two Geiger counters into the radiation to get the radiation readings, which they should have had six times from the Apollo moon mission.
Right.
For some reason, they don't have. And he says it's dangerous radiation, and before we can send people through it, we have to first develop the technology to protect them from the radiation, which he's saying the technology to send astronauts through the radiation to the moon and back and survive has not been invented yet. Let's go ahead and take a look at that clip.
Which one is that? Which number?
That's the Kelly Smith clip number four.
Navigation guidance for Orion. We are headed 3,600 miles above Earth, 15 times higher from the planet than the International Space Station. As we get further away from Earth, we'll pass through the Van Allen belts, an area of dangerous radiation. Radiation like this could harm the guidance systems, onboard computers, or other electronics on Orion. Naturally, we have to pass through this danger zone twice, once up and once back. We must solve these challenges before we send people through this region of space. We must solve these challenges before we send people through this region of space. We must solve these challenges before we send people through this region of space.
Okay, and that's his admission that the technology necessary to go to the moon through the radiation field has not been invented yet. We must solve these challenges of protecting astronauts from radiation before we send people through this region of space, meaning the technology necessary to protect the astronauts from the deadly radiation, it hasn't been invented yet. We must solve these challenges before we send people through this region of space, which they allegedly went through six times to the moon and back, which shows you the reason why they're faking being halfway to the moon in that clip we showed is because they can't go halfway because of the deadly radiation. Plus, they don't have enough fuel. Elon Musk said in order to go to the moon with newer, better, greater technology, you have to do 8 trips of fuel to a space station first, and then from there to go to the moon. We found documentation from Von Braun. He says it's impossible to go to the moon in a single rocket. You're going to need 3 rockets, each weighing 800,000 tons. The Saturn V weighed 2,500 tons, a difference of 30,000%. I wonder why the Nazi recanted on his math by 30,000%. You see, so this is why they can't go to the moon. So I'm a journalist. I call up NASA. I say, hey, you sent up 2 Geiger counters in a civilian mission on the Orion project. Can I have those readings? They said it's a military secret. I'm like, okay, well, wait a minute. You sent a probe to the sun to measure the temperature of the sun. The temperature of the sun is not a secret. And you sent a probe to Jupiter to measure how much helium is in Jupiter's atmosphere. That's not a secret. So why would an element of nature, how much radiation is in the radiation field, why would that be a secret? Because if they revealed it, it would prove they cannot go through it to the moon and back, as Kelly Smith just said. The technology necessary to go through it to the moon and back and survive has not been invented yet.
Yeah, well, the technology would be lead or something, right? And it's the fact that we can't build a structure that is both light enough to fly and strong enough to block the radiation, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So if they can't go to the moon today, how could they go to the moon back then? I mean, if you could go to the moon with 1 minute the computing power of 1969, we would have been on Mars 10 years later. We'd be in another solar system by now. There'd be bases all over the moon. I mean, just 10 years after the first atomic bomb, atomic bombs were 1 1,000 times more powerful. Imagine how far we should be into space by now. And we can't because they faked it like a bluff in poker.
So let's go to some more of these clips. I do have questions about, like, you know, because they are planning moon missions right now. There are plans to send astronauts to the moon. I'm wondering what the future holds, if they're going to fake those or if they think they can pull it off now. I'm interested in getting to that, but I'd rather get to some of these videos first because, you know, what you've previewed for us is pretty astonishing.
Yeah, this next clip is about 4 minutes long. You can tell me if we have 4 minutes in this segment or not. You can show the picture that's attached in the email of Cyrus Eugene Akers. This is the gentleman who confessed as he was dying that he committed homicide. He killed a co-worker at Cannon Air Force Base who was going to squeal about the moon landing fraud. That was the Air Force Base's special ops headquarters. Bill Casey, my source, said the United States Air Force supervised the faking of the moon landing.
Well, we don't have enough time to show that, so we'll show that in the next.
Okay.
But let me ask you about that, because it always made sense to me that obviously the moon landing was a publicity stunt, right? I mean, the only reason we went there, I mean, we got moon rocks, I guess, whatever value that is, but it was about that image. It was about the bragging rights. It was about being in the Cold War and winning the space race. And so it always made sense to me that maybe while we sent a mission to the moon, we also filmed sort of maybe a backup. Because if it ended up we got to the moon and the radio signals didn't make it back to Earth, and what was the point of even going? So it always made sense to me that maybe they had a backup plan where they filmed a fake moon landing in case the real one didn't work.
Well, they would like you to believe that.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a film coming out that's going to ask you to believe that. Hmm. That they did shoot fake footage, but for some reason they went to the moon anyway. If you really went to the moon, you would never shoot fake footage that could be mixed in with the genuine, because then you would be accused of faking the entire mission. You would never do that if you really went. It's very simple. The reason why the shadows intersect with electrical lighting is because they faked the mission. The reason why they faked it is because they can't go. There's a film coming out. We know the CIA does Hollywood films all the time, and they're going to apparently imply that they really went but shot fake footage anyway. No. You only shoot fake footage because you can't go, period. Get over it. People need to wake up and smell the manure.
Do you think Kubrick had anything to do with it?
That's a possibility. He's who I would have hired.
And right, yes, same here.
And in 1968, he was coincidentally shooting a film about going to the moon.
That also looked very convincing.
That's right. And different than the Apollo pictures, you see,
right,
to show a fake version and a, quote, real version. You see? And he insisted his last film, Eyes Wide Shut, open on the 30th anniversary of the launch to the moon. And in The Shining, we have the little red rum boy with a hand-knit
Apollo 11 shirt. There's a lot in The Shining. I mean, yeah. Some of The Shining stuff went a ways to convince me, because Stanley Kubrick was so particular about everything he did. And yet in the first shot of The Shining, you can see like the shadow of the helicopter that's filming. And I always thought, is this a little hint? Is he saying, look, I'm showing you behind the scenes here, and then there's the Apollo sweater, and there's the room 237, which he changed, and that's the number of miles to the moon. So there are lots of little hints in The Shining.
It's not really relevant. They did fake it. That's the bigger issue. But
right,
that's who I would have picked, and that's who they probably did choose for the first mission.
Seems like it, yeah. And then, of course, his death was pretty suspicious as well, right before the release of Eyes Wide Shut. He knew some stuff one way or another. We'll be back with that footage on the other side, so stay with us. More with Bart Sobrel on the other side, Sobrel.com. All right, welcome back, folks. Man, we are going to end strong. I have a feeling this last segment is going to be probably the best one to watch if you're tuned in. Thank you for being here. My guest is Bart Sobrel. You can follow him on YouTube. He has a YouTube channel at BartSobrel1 or Sobrel.com, where you can see his movies, including Astronauts Gone Wild and A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. Sobrel.com. So this next clip, set it up for us and we'll roll right into it.
Well, this is the son of the man who I witnessed them filming the moon landing at Cannon Air Force Base. He was the chief of security. Let's just take a look at his testimony.
To lie. To get caught lying was worse than whatever it was you did to begin with. I remember going to school with long sleeve shirts on to hide the purple welts. You did not lie in our house, that's for sure. Dad had a real, really bad attitude towards lying. Excuse me again. Okay, anyway, this is the story that my dad told me on his deathbed. Project Slam Dunk was the name of this. President Johnson in 1968, okay? In Cannon Air Force Base in 1968, he said by that time, by the time he got there, that there was already two large hangars that were connected. There was hundreds of dump trucks that came in and dumped sand and stone, and cement powder was powdered over the top of all that to make it look like a lunar landscape. They had men that fashioned it into a lunar landscape, he said. Okay, I've never known my dad to lie, so this all took me by surprise. You know, what's that all about? So anyway, he said that in front of the airplane hangars was pole framing with large canvas tents that was concealing the inside of the staging area. Inside the staging area on flatbed trucks was uncrated the lunar lander that was assembled, reassembled back inside the hangars. All of the walls were painted flat black, and the ceilings as well. He was sworn to secrecy by the NSA, and they would put him in prison for breaking that oath. When Dad saw the moon landing on TV, he cried. He said he knew that what he had witnessed on TV was exactly what they recorded in that hangar. There was no reason for them to go flying around and everything. They had detailed high-definition photos of the landing area. There was no reason for them to go flying around to a different landing area that almost exhausted their fuel, except for drama, because everything had gone so smoothly. Nothing, you know, so it had to be something. Anyway, Dad was one of three guards that guarded the inside of the front entrance. There was a list of 15 people who could enter. No one else was allowed by order of President Johnson. And here is that list. And I gave it to Bart Sibrel as well. And he checked out a lot of these names, and he says he can verify a lot of these people and what they do. And I come across a couple myself. Anyway, President Johnson, Neil Armstrong, Edwin Alden, Wernher von Braun, Robert Emmenegger, Gene Kranz, James Webb, Joe Kerwin, Dr. Thomas Paine, Glenn Looney, Dr. Christopher Kraft, Dr. James Van Allen, General Trudeau, Lieutenant Colonel Donald Simon, and Grant Norrie.
So those would be the 15 names that were sort of at the heart of this conspiracy. And that was the son relaying his father's deathbed confession. That's
correct.
Fascinating.
And we didn't include the part, but yeah, he confessed to murdering a coworker to cover it up. And so, you know, I believe that was his testimony. My source said it was supervised by the United States Air Force. Every branch of the military has their special ops headquarters.
Right.
And the special ops headquarters for the U.S. Air Force is Cannon Air Force Base, where that man's father was chief of security. He's now dead as well. The last clip is kind of fascinating. We talked about it, how I left a hot mic on an astronaut after I showed him the fake footage, who got really upset and literally kicked me from behind. And in the commotion, we left the microphone in there and forgot to turn off the camera. And while it's in the backseat of the rental car in the guy's driveway, we're recording the private conversations between him and his son. And you can go ahead and take a listen to that right now.
Want to call the CIA? Have them wrapped.
And there you go. Now, if they really went to the moon, and I'm some silly person who thinks it was filmed at Cannon Air Force Base, why would the CIA have to kill me? You see? And so that's indirect evidence. And so is the fact that they destroyed all the original videotapes, the telemetry, the hardware, the schematics, because you could prove technically that the lunar module couldn't compete air conditioning on a bunch of car batteries against 250 degrees. You would never destroy a $200 billion investment, and especially the original videotapes, if you really went to the moon. But that's exactly what you would do if you perpetrated a fraud. So that's the proof. And then during the break, I wanted to mention this book, which is in audio, Kindle, or print. I read it myself in audio at Sabrell.com. It goes into things that I didn't mention in the film. And one, basically, when I found this footage, I was followed from church, and you know, late at night, and I was obviously being followed. They zapped my car somehow. It died on the middle of the highway. I'm literally being chased by two or three people to get this tape. I hire a cab to drive me to CNN in Atlanta, where I have a friend who works. I'm literally at the back alley to hand it through the back door. I'm surrounded by government agents who I hear behind me say, "Do you have the thing? Where's the thing? I thought he had the thing. Here's the thing." They all have rubber gloves on. The thing is like a hospital bracelet they put around my wrist where all my veins are. And within a minute, I feel very drugged to the point of vomiting, absorbed through the thing. They interrogate me in a pitch black van. I told them everything they wanted to know so you don't have to waterboard people. And I escaped their custody. I made my way back to Nashville. I peed in a cup, and Harrison, I said, "I got him. I'm going
to
prove."
To prove that they'd given you a truth serum of some sort.
Exactly. Some drug only the government would know. So I pee in a cup, and I'm trying to outwit the CIA, right? So I give it to a friend to put in a lab in his name. After a few days, we meet. I'm saying, "Well, what were the results?" He said, "Well, there was a problem at the lab." And I'm like, "What problem?" He says, "Well, they had a break-in over the weekend." And I'm like, "Well, so what?" He says, "Well, funny thing. The only thing stolen was a urine sample." So the people at the lab are like, "We don't know who you are, but please take your business elsewhere."
Right.
So this, what I talk about in my book, a funny thing happened on the way to CNN, a funny thing happened on the way to church, it would make a movie. Yeah. I was literally kidnapped by the CIA because I have proof in my house at the time that they did, in fact, fake the moon landing. And what's the guy's name? Ralph Nader was harassed. The CEO of GM sent FBI agents after him just to not put airbags in cars.
Right.
Imagine the harassment a person would receive for having proof that they did indeed fake the moon landing. And that's my life. It is like a movie. Maybe they'll make a movie about it someday. And I never said this stuff before because I'm already trying to get people to swallow this difficult pill that they faked the moon landing.
Right.
I kept all of this to myself. But I'm like, well, I'm going to make this book. I might as well tell what really happened.
Yeah.
And you can read it at Sabrell.com. And then we have the deathbed testimony squeezed in at the last minute. Let me see. I've got a minute left. I also was told information that I was not allowed to put in the film to respect people. I interviewed Betty Grissom, the widow of the man who was going to be the first man to walk on the moon. She says he was murdered by the CIA for not cooperating with fraud at NASA. So the first document of our country is not the Constitution. It's the Declaration of Independence, which says when any government becomes destructive of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Now, it's her testimony, not mine, that an astronaut, an honorable man, was murdered by the CIA for not cooperating with the moon landing fraud. What's the first one? Life. They're taking a third of our tax dollars to fake the moon landing, which people are defending out of pride innocently. And then they're using that money to hire CIA agents to kill our brothers and sisters who are exposing their crimes. Now, I think this needs to stop.
Absolutely.
I think the moon landing fraud coming out is the linchpin, the finger out of the dike, just like the news director at NBC said, that will upset people enough. We can't have a great awakening unless we know that the moon landing fraud took
place. Incredible stuff. Bart Sabrell, Sabrell.com.